Welcome into the Friday Night 360 AZ Preview Show. I'm Jordan Hamm alongside Haley Stasiak. We have nothing to preview in the way of games, but still plenty of big high school football storylines, and also going to recap that big state championship weekend down in Tucson. And with that, we are going to go ahead and bring in the AIA Executive Director, David Hines. David, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, you bet. Glad to join you.
So it was your first year as the executive director. How did the past 2 weeks go for you in the way of the football state championships?
I'll tell you what, it was just a tremendous last couple weeks. Started with the 2A, 3A state football championship at Campo Verde. We had great crowds, great games. Had an overtime game and another game that went down in the last couple, 3 minutes. And then, of course, at the University of Arizona, we had three great games there, concluding with the shootout of the 6A 49-42 with Chandler coming on top of Perry. But again, I thought we had great attendance. The facility was awesome, and it was a good day.
What was your biggest takeaway from this 2017 football season?
I think you could see it across the board, a little more parity in that we had some tremendous games throughout the season, saw some highly ranked teams that got knocked off. If you look at the 6A level, 8-2, was kind of the norm. We didn't have two or three undefeated teams going in. Everybody's playing each other and knocked each other off a little bit. And even in the lower levels, the smaller schools, 2A, 3A, some of the teams that were undefeated coming into either the quarters or semifinals, got knocked off. I guess that's why we play the game. But also, you have to be on your game the day we play. And some teams really stepped up.
It was reported last month that the AIA would be vigorously pursuing the way that they handle their realignment procedures when it comes to football for that 2020 to 2022 block. Where are you in that process, and how do you think that would impact the sport?
Well, we are going to spend the next about year and a half basically gathering information, working with our football coaches, our athletic directors, our schools. We're going to develop some data. We're going to develop a strategy, a process, and a procedure that when we come back to the table a couple years from now, that we will have in place football that we will just look at completely different. And we will look at schools that have been successful. We'll look at schools that have, even though they may be large schools, have a demographic that's a challenge to get kids out, the competitive nature of schools, whether it's high competitive or not real competitive. And it will try to work on placing those in conferences that will be competitive, that they have where they probably should belong, where they play. And I think that everything that we have had in reclassification in the last few years has been based on football, how we put teams in region based on football, how we put teams in conferences based on football. So if that's what we do, then we need to look at football as its own entity. And we're going to begin that process this spring.
Every 2 years, there's a lot of debate about the realignment. Just what brought on the changes for them to happen this next cycle?
Well, as we come in the next cycle, we're watching the conferences as they're going through the region alignment, putting teams in region. Some schools have moved up. Some schools have moved down. At the 1, 2, and 3A level, they divide some schools through public schools, charter schools, and private schools, and they kind of divide them up in thirds. And as I'm sitting there watching, again, everything is dictated off of football. But we have 21 sports we play, and our reclassification should be based on all of those in totality. but that's not what was happening. So we have kind of gone to the executive board and say, we need some time to prepare and plan. We're not just going to throw something out there. We're going to plan. But everybody needs to know in the next couple of years, we're going to look at this in a different way.
You mentioned the facilities down in Tucson for the state championships. Do you see this as a site moving forward that's going to be the go-to hosting site?
Well, again, it all depends. We have great access and partners with several facilities. The problem is if they're available. So University of Phoenix has been very good to us, but they had three Cardinal games in a row right when we're running our state championships. ASU has been under construction for the last 4 years. U of A was available this year, but then they're going to go under construction for the next couple of years. But whether we're at any one of those three facilities, we would like to make sure that we have those in place well in advance so everybody knows. But again, what's the best thing for our association, cost-effective wise, location wise, and their availability? All of the institutions, if they're available, are outstanding to work with. It just comes down to, do they have something going on at that particular weekend?
Now that the football season has wrapped up, what is the AIA? Where are they shifting their focus as this school year continues?
Well, as we go in, all of our winter sports are now up and going full speed. So our next focus a little bit is going to be on preparing for our winter sports championships here in the beginning, about the middle of February through the end of the month, with wrestling and soccer and basketball. So we anticipate some great tournaments there, and then we're planning for the remainder of the year with our spring sports. We are offering beach volleyball. This is the sixth year that we have had it. It has been an emerging sport for the last five. We are now this year going to award a true state championship trophy in beach volleyball.
Exciting stuff. We appreciate you coming on, and thanks for the time.
Thank you guys very, very much.
All right, that was David Hines, AIA Executive Director. We have a jam-packed show for you moving forward. We're going to have Arizona Varsity's Ralph Amsden here to help break down what happened this past week in the state championships, as well as Jason Jewell, the Sports 360 AZ recruiting expert, to look ahead at signing day, as well as the Ed Doherty Award. That's coming up next on the Friday Night 360 AZ Preview Show.
Welcome back into the Friday Night 360 AZ Preview Show. Haley Stasiak and Jordan Hamm. The season has wrapped up, and now we're looking forward and a little bit back on the last season. We're joined now by Arizona Varsity's Ralph Amsden. Ralph, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, guys.
If you could sum up this 2017 season in one sentence, how would you sum it up?
Great. I thought it was a great season. I thought there was a lot of positive storylines, a lot of athletes establishing themselves, and just some very, very, very good teams. I really enjoyed it.
You made an interesting point to me this Saturday after Saguaro won their fifth straight title that if they can win five, they can win eight. And I just wanted to ask you just about the way that Saguaro has their roster compiled, because they had the veterans, they had the Max Massengales, the Josiah Bradleys, the two receivers on the outside, the guys that had been multiple year starters, but they also had a ton of young guys. So just what do you foresee for this Saguaro team over the years to come?
Well, I mean, especially defensively, they were incredibly young with, you know, Keely Ringo, Connor Soley, and Seth Robinson, and all those guys. I mean, they just didn't really have a lot of seniors. I think maybe their nose tackle was a senior, and that's it. On the offensive line, not only were they very young, but they had some injuries and had to play some even younger guys. And so now they're going to be a little bit older and a little bit deeper headed into next year. They're pretty much – they're replacing, Josiah Bradley and Max Massengale, and their two outside receivers – And while that would be a Herculean task for most schools, they actually have the ability for whoever comes in at quarterback and whoever's going to be playing receiver to go through some growing pains, because I believe the defense will really be able to hold it down for them.
Do teams that had outstanding seasons this year, like Perry, Notre Dame Prep, Liberty, and the like, in your opinion, are these teams that we should continue to watch in the coming years?
Well, Notre Dame Prep, it's tough because they were so senior-heavy, but I think once you've established that culture, and you have to remember that they were actually pretty darn good over a three-year period, not just this year. They were held out of the playoffs, through something they couldn't really control last year. And then 2 years ago, they were basically the number 17 team in their region, and they really are in their division. And I personally felt like they really deserved to be in the playoffs that year. And so that year over year, they've managed to have some sustained success. And I think with bringing Jake Smith back, you already have a game breaker, and they have a pretty good quarterback coming up as well. And so it's just a matter of I guess, making sure that, they had a few opportunities to get some guys in games and develop a little bit. But I think the culture is there for them to continue to be competitive. I'm not sure it's there to continue to challenge for a championship immediately, but we'll see. Liberty, I think, I absolutely, Perry, I feel like, is right there as well. I think that what you're seeing with the teams that have either gotten better over time or become acclimated to a new division over time, I think that those are long-term solutions. That there's not a bunch of people that transferred into Liberty. There's not a bunch of people that transferred into Perry. These teams were built up over time to be successful, and I think they will be next year.
It's very rare for a Hamilton job to become available. It's very rare for a Brophy job to become available, and both are available currently. Just what type of coaches do you think, at least stylistically, would be good fits for those types of jobs?
Well, stylistically, Hamilton has sort of run the same offense or a variation of the same offense for maybe since like 2003. They really like to run the ball, and they run their little end around or their slants when they're in the red zone. They blew their previous offensive records out of the water this year, just because for the very first time that while they've been sending all these quarterbacks to play college football, they actually had a Division I talent, and that was what really afforded them to be able to open up the offense a little bit more. Now they've got a couple of talented quarterbacks. I believe Terrell Brown's younger brother was a quarterback of the freshman team. And then you have, I think, Brandon Shanks, who was CAA player of the year as a freshman before transferring into Hamilton, where his dad is now the freshman coach. So you've got some options to maybe continue to kind of diversify what they have offensively there. I would like to see them just bring in somebody who is maybe going to, I don't want to say clean house, but bring in a lot of their own people and establish their own culture. It's a new era at Hamilton, and I think it should really be treated as such. At Brophy, I think you just have you. It's going to be tough to follow Scooter Molander. He went 12 straight years winning a playoff game. There are not a lot of schools or single coaches that have ever done anything like that at the highest division in the state. So whoever comes in is just going to have to be open to the idea that it might be a rocky time trying to steer that ship and establish their own culture. I thought Scooter Molander did a lot of good there over a long period of time. And whoever they bring in, I just hope that they have the opportunity to put their own stamp on the program and they don't just sort of get lost in that shadow.
What are some things that we should be keeping an eye on as the early letter of intent day approaches?
Well, with Arizona State making a coaching switch, it's going to be important for a guy like Herm Edwards to get to evaluate some of the prospects that are already committed in Arizona State's class, and then, figure if he's going to make a push for them to sign early, because guys like Hunter McGinnis at Hamilton and Ralph Frias at Safford, were guys who I believe had planned on signing, at the early signing period. And so sometimes when it's very unique that they're keeping their whole offensive staff, but ultimately the buck stops with the head coach. So he needs to come in and get familiar with the people who are already committed in this recruiting class and decide if those are players that he wants to move forward with or not. And I probably wouldn't behoove him to make some changes to, you know, local recruits like those two, because you want as much goodwill as possible, regardless of whether or not he feels they'll fit into what he's trying to do. I wouldn't expect, you know, Jason Jewell always says that there's usually between 80 and 90 FCS or FBS athletes that sign on signing day in February. I wouldn't expect, with this being the first time that we have an early signing period, I wouldn't expect to see more than maybe 20 local guys or Arizona guys signing, because it's just such a new experience. And with all the coaches moving around, everything's really up in the air. So really, unless you're going to be somebody who is a mid-year transfer and you're committing to the school and not the coaching staff, which I think everybody knows isn't always the case, and that school is committed to you as well, I would recommend probably, for the most part, holding off just to see how everything shakes out, especially with everything that's going on with NAU, you know, basically firing the whole staff and then rehiring them before they have the chance to leave. And then with, you know, University of Arizona already has some coaches coming and going. Jim McChalzik, their talented offensive line coach, he's moved on to Oregon State. So you never really know, you know, what a coaching staff is going to look like probably until, you know, maybe early January, mid-January. So I would advise players who don't have their mind made up completely to hold off. And you know, if you've got options, you know, the worst that could happen is that you're choosing, you know, your 1A instead of, or 1B instead of 1A. So I would definitely caution student athletes, unless they're 100% got their mind made up, to just let things shake out and see what coaches are going to be where.
Ralph, always great stuff from you, and we love chatting with you. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, Haley. Jordan.
Ralph Anzen from Arizona Varsity there. Up next on the Friday Night 360 AZ Preview Show, we will have Sports 360 AZ recruiting expert Jason Jewell. Keep it right here.
Welcome back to the Friday Night 360 AZ Preview Show. We've had some great guests in David Hines and Ralph Amson, and we are certainly going to continue that with my co-host on the Rock and Refuel Recruiting Roundup and Sports 360 AZ expert, recruiting expert, Jason Jewell. Jace, how are you doing this morning?
I am fantastic. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. So just wanted to touch base with you on the season that we just ended, the recruiting season that's about to heat up, as well as the Ed Doherty Awards. What is the biggest storyline in this 2018 recruiting class that people should keep an eye on moving forward as we approach that early signing day?
Well, so the biggest story right now is, This is kind of uncharted territories as far as with this new signing period. How is it actually gonna shake out with kids? You know, they get extended early scholarship offers, and you're gonna find out if these schools, how serious are they about these players? Are they gonna send them letters of intent on December 20th? And then what are these schools gonna do if a player decides, I don't want to sign on December 20th? Are the schools going to continue to recruit that player, or is the school just going to move on? I guess it depends on how much they like the kid and their ability, and how sure they are if they're going to land that player or not. So this is going to be pretty interesting here in the next couple weeks to see what shakes down.
What surprised you most about this 2017 season?
Well, actually, not a whole lot surprised me as far as the winners. I picked those were in 6A, 5A, and 4A. I picked all of those winners. When you go back and you look at a season, there's always, you know, that spoiler type team. And I don't know if any of these, you know, the state championship games were really that much of a surprise. So I would say that is what I was looking for. I was looking for that Cinderella, and I didn't quite see that this year.
Let's look ahead to the recruiting classes. You know, 2018, I think, was surprisingly deep. And we saw some guys certainly develop late in their recruitments in Tyler Shuck and Gunnar Romney and players like that. But this 2019 class, this 2020 class, already has some big names. What do you foresee for the next two recruiting classes after this 2018 class?
Well, you know, every year you get the people that say, you know, the 2019 is not going to be nearly as good as last year, or that, you know, 2020 is not going to be nearly as good. And what I've actually found is over the years, it's been pretty consistent. There's a couple years where there were some heavily recruited guys, a handful more than in some other years. The one that kind of stands out was that Kyle Allen, Mark Andrews year where there was like, 8 or 10, four-star type prospects. But I'd say it's been pretty consistent. I've been tracking this for now for about 15 years. And, yeah, the state has, the number of Division I kids has grown, steadily, each year. But, roughly the last 5 to 7 years or so, there's been in that 80 to 90 Division I, and that could be FBS or FCS level player, there's been that many pretty much every year. So looking forward, I believe now there are 21 players in the 2019 class that already have Division I scholarship offers. There are 10 players in the 2020 class that have Division I offers, and there's one player in the 2021 class that has a Division I offer. So I think the football in Arizona has gotten better. The coaching has gotten better. The recruiting has obviously grown. There are more schools coming into Arizona and recruiting our guys, and I think that is just because Arizona is an easy place to recruit. It's easy to travel around, the state. It's easy to navigate, and most of the prospects come from the Phoenix area, so it's easy for a college coach to come in and see 20 schools in a day or two. And so that's why you see a lot of these schools coming in, right now. And right now is a busy time of year where there are plenty of schools that are coming in and going into high schools right now.
The Ed Doherty Award, you have some affiliation with that. What is this award and what is its significance?
So it's an award that had gone away. It's the State Player of the Year, and it had been around for a long time and took like a 5-year hiatus and is now coming back. So I was fortunate enough to be asked to be on the panel, and every week we would have a conference call and would nominate kids that had stellar performances, on the previous Friday night, and then we would all vote and name a top 3 or 5 that were going to be at this banquet on Saturday, and it's going to name the top player in the state, the player of the year, basically the Heisman Trophy of Arizona high school football. And there's been some great players in the past been honored by this. You look at Kyle Caldwell over at Saguaro High School. Everson Griffin is having a great year for the Minnesota Vikings. Jake Rowe at Boise State was just named All-Mountain West, and he was the last player to receive this award 5 years ago. So it's going to be awesome to see who wins this on Saturday.
46 players have earned medallions in the regular season and are among that group. Just when you look at that field, just what sort of talent are we dealing with?
When I went and did my ballot and my votes, and I was like, wow, this is really, really hard. We had to narrow the 46 down to a 15, then down to a 5, and then down to your winner. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is hard. I started to get it into like the 7th and 8th guy, and I'm like, I saw him live. I didn't see him live till the end of the year, and it was very, very difficult. There are some very good high school football players in the state of Arizona. I always say this, that our top 10 to 15 prospects in the state can compete with kids from Texas and Georgia and Florida, any day of the week. So I'm looking forward to Saturday. I think it's going to be fun.
I'll be down there as well and looking forward to hanging out with you a bit down there and checking the event out as well. Thanks so much for joining us, Jason.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it.
All right, Jason Jewell, Sports 360 AZ recruiting expert. So we covered a lot of ground in this show. What was your biggest takeaway from these three guests?
It was interesting that no one was really surprised about how everything shook out this year. I think the talent is just statewide, and mm-hmm. you kind of had the teams that you expected to make the big runs and expected to be your state champions, and they did it. And there was no surprise, and things shook out the way everyone expected them to.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to be interesting moving forward, especially speaking to Executive Director Hines about just the future of the sport off the field in terms of realignment and the venues. And there's a lot of change coming, and I think that that's going to be a good thing. And I think that Executive Director Hines is a good man for the job to help help kind of steer that. We've already seen in his short time running things, just the changes that have been made, and the willingness to admit that maybe some things in high school sports aren't working as well as they should, and let's make some adjustments. Yeah, so this is going to be the last show, at least covering this 2017 season. We may have a few other episodes focusing on the recruiting classes and various offseason storylines, but we just wanted to put a bow on that 2017 season. Thanks so much to all the coaches, all the media members, players, really everyone who tuned in and joined the show to help provide some insight. It's a very strong community, I feel like, just of people covering the event, and you can tell a lot of these coaches really care about the programs and the well-being of these young student athletes. So thanks so much for tuning in to the Friday Night 360 AZ preview show all season long.